not, however, as she experiences it, because of her own needs. She is not able to acknowledge that. "I'm really upset," she says, with intense anger in her voice. "Johnny and Mary, the children, have been waiting all day for you to come home. Now it's almost their bedtime. And I'm especially worried about Johnny. You've hardly been with him this week. He's been missing you terribly. He is a son without a father." What is happening here? The question of Victor's parenting may be a worthwhile subject for discussion, but it is not to the point. At this moment, Judy is using the children as a deflection from an important issue between her and Victor. Victor, too, may have his own motives for colluding with this deflection. Perhaps Judy feels that she has no right to be angry about Victor's late return. After all, the meeting was an important part of his job, and the traffic jam was not his doing. Her belief that her anger is not rational, legitimate, or mature may prevent her from being able to articulate it, even to herself. Or it may be that the issue is a loaded one. Victor's lateness may touch on Judy's long-buried anger regarding the extent to which Victor is pulling his weight in the marriage. If Judy and Victor have a flexible relationship, free from unmanageable levels of anxiety, the triangle will be temporary and of little consequence. When Judy cools off a bit, she will be able to share her feelings with Victor, including what a hard day she had and how angry and frustrated she felt when he did not return at 5 to offer her company and relief. But what if Judy does not feel safe speaking to Victor in her own voice? What if this couple is rigidly guarded against identifying the underground conflicts in their marriage? Over time, a triangle consisting of Judy, Victor, and one of the children may become rigidly entrenched. Judy may find herself constantly blowing up at one of the kids instead of at Victor. Or she may intensify her relationship with Mary or Johnny in a manner that will help keep things calm on the marital front. This can happen in any number of ways. Mother and Johnny may form an overly close relationship that will compensate for a distant marriage and help keep father in an outside position in the family. Mother may complain to her daughter about her husband, rather than confining these issues to the marriage, where they belong. Or one of the children may become a major focus for concern, perhaps through the development of an emotional or behavior problem, thus drawing Judy's attention away from her own dissatisfaction in the marriage, and perhaps enabling Victor and Judy to experience a pseudo-closeness as parents attempting to care for their troubled child. The third leg of the triangle need not be a child. It could be Judy's mother, an in-law, or a person with whom Judy or Victor is having an affair. Triangles take on an endless variety of forms, but in each case, the intensity between Judy and a third party will be fueled by unaddressed issues in her marriage, and marital issues will become increasingly difficult to work on as the triangle becomes more entrenched. Of course, Judy's anger at her husband may be gaining steam from unaddressed issues with others, such as her own mother or father. People of both sexes and all ages participate in multiple interlocking triangles that may span several generations. But as we have seen, women often have a greater, exaggerated fear about rocking the boat in an important relationship with a man. Thus, we are likely to avoid a direct confrontation and instead detour our anger through a relationship with a less powerful person, such as a child or another woman. How might such a triangle operate at work? A triangle on the job. Melissa was a bright young woman who was appointed director of nursing in a small private hospital run almost exclusively by men. As it turned out, she was occupying a token position that afforded her little real authority. Month after month, Melissa sat in meetings where her contributions were ignored, and where she felt increasingly powerless to influence institutional policy affecting the nursing discipline. Melissa's sense of gratitude for being among the chosen few, her dread of her own anger at male authorities, and her unconscious fear that greater personal clarity might lead to a confrontation that would lose her the approval of those in power, all combined to keep her from feeling angry and addressing issues directly where they belonged. Melissa's customary style was to behave deferentially to high-status males and to protect men in authority from the criticisms of other women. Perhaps this style played some part in her landing the director's position to begin with. Melissa began to deal with her underground anxiety and anger in a triangular fashion. First, she began to supervise her nursing staff very closely, moving in quickly at the slightest hint of a problem. Over time, she became increasingly reactive to one particular nurse, Suzanne, who became the third leg of the triangle. Suzanne was an outspoken, highly competent young woman who was not particularly mindful of rules and paperwork deadlines, and who easily voiced the anger at male leadership that Melissa could not. Melissa overreacted to any careless error that Suzanne made or paperwork deadline that she failed to meet, and began to treat her as a special problem who needed to be watched. For example, Melissa wrote long memos to another of Suzanne's supervisors about Suzanne's late paperwork, rather than express her concerns directly to Suzanne. As Suzanne's anxiety skyrocketed, she unwittingly escalated things further by running around and trying to form allies among her fellow nurses to join her in criticizing Melissa. Tensions between the two women continued to mount. Suzanne's late paperwork became a more serious problem, and 6 months down the road, Melissa fired her, with the seal of approval from her male superiors. Melissa and Suzanne were involved in a triangle that began at the highest levels of the organization. The relationship between Melissa and her male superiors could stay calm and non-conflictual because the underground anger was played out lower down the hierarchy, in this case at Suzanne's expense. Melissa made no moves to empower the nursing staff within the organization, and this remained the unspoken and unacknowledged hot issue between her and the male authorities. Was Melissa then the cause of the problem? Did it start with her? Of course not. If Melissa had been in an institution where women were truly empowered, and where she, as a female, was not a numerically scarce commodity at the top, her behavior would have been quite different. In fact, research indicates that women who hold positions of authority in male-dominated settings are not able to clearly define their own selves or successfully identify issues common to women until the relative numbers of men and women become more balanced. No one person was to blame for the scapegoating of Suzanne, nor was she a helpless victim of circumstances who had no participation in her fate. In the best of all possible worlds, we might envision separate person-to-person relationships with our friends, co-workers, and family members that were not excessively influenced by other relationships. For example, our relationship with our mother and that with our father would not be largely defined by the fact that they were battling something out together. We would stay out of conflicts between other parties and keep other people from getting in the middle of our own fights. If we were angry at Sue, we would go to Sue about it and not complain to Sally about Sue. We would not detour anger and intensity over one relationship to another. That's the ideal. However, we achieve it only more or less. Triangles are present in all human systems. When anxiety mounts between two people or conflicts begin to surface, a third party will automatically and unconsciously be drawn in. All of us participate in numerous interlocking triangles we are not even aware of. Many of these are not particularly problematic, but one or more may well be. How do we get out of something that we may not even realize we're in? Understanding triangles requires that we keep an eye on two things. First, what unresolved and unaddressed issues with an important other, not infrequently someone from an earlier generation, are getting played out in our current relationships? Intense anger at someone close to us can signal that we are carrying around strong, unacknowledged emotions from another important relationship. Second, what is our part in maintaining triangular patterns that keep us stuck? To find out, we must begin the complex task of observing our three-person patterns. Let's consider a key triangle in a family that was plagued by anger and anxiety on all fronts. A multi-generational triangle in action. The Kessler family. I'm here because I'm very worried about my son Billy, explained Ms. Kessler, who had called the Menninger Foundation to request help with her oldest son and to get some relief from her own feelings of chronic anger and stress. He's always been a pretty good kid, but since third grade this year he's been having school problems. Billy and his father are at each other's throats about it, and their relationship is deteriorating. I've done everything I can to change the situation between Billy and his dad, and to help Billy be more responsible at school. Nothing helps. I'm feeling angry at Billy, and I'm also angry at my husband John, who is taking a punitive approach with the boy. I tried to get John to come with me today, but he's not interested. He thinks that therapists are quacks, and that this is a lot of bunk. In the first few minutes of our appointment, Ms. Kessler's view of the problem became clear. The problem in the family was Billy and Billy's father. If we could ask Mr. Kessler, he might see the problem as Billy and Billy's mother. It is expectable, predictable, and quite normal for family members to define a problem in this way. When we feel angry, we tend to see people rather than patterns as the problem. The Kessler nuclear family consists of Mr. Kessler, age 36, Ms. Kessler, age 37, the firstborn child, 8-year-old Billy, 6-year-old brother Joe, and 4-year-old sister Anne. Who does what in response to whom, and then what? What is the interactional pattern in the Kessler family that gets set in motion around Billy's school problem? All of us, individuals and families, react to stress in predictable patterned ways. If Ms. Kessler is to use her anger as a guide for changing her position in the family, her first task is to learn to observe the current stuck patterns. When I questioned Ms. Kessler about specific details, she described a sequence of events that had occurred the previous evening. Billy watched television after dinner instead of doing some math problems that he had agreed to finish at this time. Father noticed first and sternly reprimanded Billy for behaving irresponsibly and failing to meet his agreement. Billy hedged, "I'll do it after this program is over," and his father became angrier. Mother, who was doing the dishes and listening from the next room, yelled from the kitchen, "John, there is no need to be so hard on the boy. The program will be over in 15 minutes." Father yelled back, "You stay out of this. If you didn't spoil Billy to begin with, the situation in school would never have gotten this far." Mother and father continued to argue until Billy retreated to his room and lay down on the bed. Father then distanced from mother, who pursued him unsuccessfully, and then withdrew herself. Before Ms. Kessler spoke up, the triangle consisted of two calm sides and one conflictual side between father and son. When Ms. Kessler entered the interaction in a rescuing position toward Billy, she became the focus of Mr. Kessler's criticisms, and the triangle shifted. Scenario 1. This triangle would not necessarily be problematic if the pattern was transient and flexible. Let us suppose, for example, that the following events occurred later that evening. After Billy went to sleep, Mr. and Ms. Kessler talked together about their different perspectives on Billy's problem. They recognized that they had different opinions about the meanings of their son's behavior, but were nonetheless able to reach a consensus on how to handle Billy that they both could support. Mr. Kessler then shared with his wife that he was upset about an incident at work, and perhaps that was part of the reason why he had reacted so strongly to Billy. Ms. Kessler speculated that perhaps she was especially sensitive to his criticizing Billy because her own dad was always fighting with her older brother, also a firstborn son like Billy, and this had been very stressful for her. Mr. and Ms. Kessler would leave the subject of Billy behind as they moved on to talk about other issues in their personal or work lives or in their relationship together. Scenario 2. But such flexibility did not characterize the Kessler family. Instead, Ms. Kessler was describing a repetitive pattern that was moving in increasingly rapid and intense cycles. When this family was under stress, the following occurred. Father was stuck in a blaming position toward Billy. He became intense at the first sign of misbehavior or irresponsibility on the part of his son. You're going to get into deep trouble if you don't shape up. Mother was stuck in a rescuing position toward Billy and a blaming position toward father. John, that boy needs a little love and understanding from you, not an iron hand. Sometimes she would adopt the role of the mediating or fix-it person. She would offer both her husband and her son advice on how they might better handle each other and themselves. Billy was stuck in the under-functioning position in the family. He had already acquired the label problem child at home and in school, and he was the overriding focus of parental worry and concern. Last but not least, Mr. and Ms. Kessler were stuck in repetitive cycles of fighting over how to parent, in which Mr. Kessler stood for law and order, and Ms. Kessler for love and understanding. The emotional intensity of these fights deflected and obscured other important issues in their marriage and their personal lives. What now, Ms. Kessler? During the following weeks, Ms. Kessler learned to observe her own anger as well as the family's pattern of interaction around Billy's problematic behavior. Now she could more clearly identify her characteristic style of handling stress. She saw that she assumed a rescuing position toward Billy, a blaming position toward her husband, and occasionally a peacemaking or mediating position between Billy and his father. Ms. Kessler also noted that her participation in the old pattern was not effective. Whenever she tried to come to Billy's defense, her husband perceived her as siding with Billy and turned his criticisms against her. Ms. Kessler was now ready to think about her options for moving differently. Getting out of the middle. When we continue unsuccessful efforts to intervene in another relationship, we are part of a triangle. The most difficult job that Ms. Kessler had before her was to let her husband and son fend for themselves and manage their own relationship without her. Here's what she did. First, she went to her husband and apologized to him for interfering in his relationship with Billy. She admitted that she might have made things worse by thinking that she had any answers or advice for either of them about their relationship. She empathized with her husband's worry about Billy, and praised his involvement as a father and his efforts to help his son grow up to be a responsible person. She expressed confidence that he and Billy could work out whatever problems they had. To her son, she said, "Billy, I realize that I've been getting exhausted by rushing in and playing the role of the American Red Cross when you and your dad argue. You're a smart kid, and you know what gets your dad's goat. I'm sure that you and your dad will be able to work things out together. And from now on, you're on your own." Next, Ms. Kessler did her best to stay calm and stay out when the counter moves came rolling in. Predictably, the other family members made some attempt to up the ante and reinstate the old triangle. Dad took off his belt to Billy, whereas previously he had gone after his son only with harsh words. Billy ran to his mother, tearfully complaining about his father's cruelty. Even Billy's younger siblings got into the act. "Mom, Dad's going after Billy again." A typical test from Billy would go something like this. "Billy, Daddy says I can't go to the baseball game tomorrow night, and I'm the catcher. Can't you make him change his mind?" "Mother, that's between you and Dad, Billy. Talk to him about it if it's bothering you." Billy, crying, "But he doesn't listen." Mother, "Well, Billy, this is between you and Dad to work out. You're both smart people. Try to work it out the best you can." Billy, "Daddy isn't fair. You wouldn't make me miss the game." Mother, "Daddy and I may set different rules sometimes. This is Daddy's rule, and whether you go to the game or don't go to the game is up to Dad. This is between you and Dad." Although Billy tried to draw his mother back in the middle, he was enormously reassured by her new position. In a way, Billy was unconsciously testing out whether he truly had his mother's permission to have a separate relationship with his dad, or whether his mother needed him to be loyal to her, with the two of them subtly in alliance against a father labeled unfair or incompetent. Through her new behavior, Ms. Kessler was letting Billy know that she did not need to keep up the old triangle, in which Father would be on the outside. Billy could work things out with his dad without having to worry so much about his mom. Maintaining her new position was anything but easy. "I get terribly tense when John and Billy go at it," Ms. Kessler explained to me. "When I hear John go on, I start feeling upset and ready to blow. Sometimes I go to the bathroom just to get away or leave the house to take a walk." Ms. Kessler was able to take this distance when she needed it, without criticizing her husband. In a calm, non-blaming manner, she explained to him, "When you and Billy start getting riled up, I sometimes react by getting uncomfortable and upset. I'm not sure what my reaction is about, but when I start to feel this way, I may leave the room or take a walk because that helps." She made it clear to her husband that she took responsibility for her own feelings and reactions, and she was not blaming him for causing her discomfort. Throughout the process, Ms. Kessler conveyed confidence that her husband and son could take care of their own relationship without her help. But what if Ms. Kessler believes that her husband might physically abuse their son? Obviously, she will need to take a firm position against violence and protect Billy as best she can, even if this means calling the police. However, violence will be least likely to occur if she can do this without reinstating the old triangle, because triangles greatly increase the probability of escalating aggression. For example, she might say to her husband, ideally, at a relatively calm moment, "I need to tell you that I have a real fear that things between you and Billy will heat up to the point where he gets injured. I know that I can't solve anything between the two of you, but I can't live with violence. If that happens, I will do whatever is necessary to separate the two of you." To Billy, she might say pretty much the same thing. "I know that in the long run you and your dad have to work out your own problems, but as I told Dad yesterday, I will step in if I get worried that things are getting so heated up that someone might get hurt." Taking a responsible position with each party need not mean falling back into the old pattern. What happened in the Kessler family as a consequence of Ms. Kessler's getting out of the triangle? Mr. Kessler became less reactive to Billy's problems and provocations. He moved in less quickly and intensely. Billy, in turn, began to take more responsibility for his own behavior, and his school problems all but disappeared. The relationship between father and son was greatly improved. Does this sound like the Kessler family lived happily ever after? Not exactly. First, mother and Billy started to have open conflict in their relationship. Further, marital issues concerning closeness and distance surfaced between husband and wife. Mr. Kessler became depressed and called me for an appointment despite his disapproval of psychotherapy. Why did this happen? Triangles serve to keep anxiety-arousing issues underground, and that is why we all participate in them. When a triangle is disrupted, and we begin to have a person-to-person relationship with each family member, without a third party interfering, hidden issues surface. This is emotionally difficult, but it also provides us with an opportunity to stop focusing on others and look more closely at ourselves. Looking backward, our first family. When things settled down with Billy, the next step for Mr. and Ms. Kessler was to turn attention to their families of origin and begin to gather some data about the past. When a child or spouse is underfunctioning and has become the primary focus of our anger, worry, or concern, it is helpful to take a look at the larger family picture. A broad approach to the problem will help to shed light on a number of questions. Why was Billy targeted to become a problem child in this family, rather than his younger brother or sister? Why did family interactions suddenly heat up when Billy entered third grade? Why was Mr. Kessler so reactive to the issue of responsibility in his son? Why was Ms. Kessler so reactive to her husband and son's fighting? Why did Mr. Kessler become depressed after he and Billy resolved their former conflicts? Most important, what work can Mr. and Ms. Kessler do to best ensure that no one family member will seriously underfunction or become the problem, as Billy did? Let's take a look at an expanded family diagram of the Kessler family and gather a few more facts. If you're feeling ambitious, you may want to draw a diagram of your own family, including, if you can, at least 3 generations. The diagram of the Kessler family is incomplete in order to keep it uncluttered and to highlight certain key points. A complete family diagram would include the dates of births, deaths, serious illnesses, marriages, and divorces, and the highest level of formal education for every member of the extended family, for as far back as we can go. What does this family diagram tell us? Looking at father's side of the family, we see that he has a younger sister, Gina, who is married and has 2 daughters. If we do some simple arithmetic, we learn that Mr. Kessler's father, Louis, was a first-born son who died at age 35, when Mr. Kessler was 8 years old. Mr. Kessler's mother, Lorraine, is the younger sister of a sister and did not remarry following her husband's death. Looking at mother's family of origin, we see that she is a middle child. Her older brother, Les, is twice divorced, and her younger brother, Ken, is married and has 1 daughter. I learned from Ms. Kessler that Les is the black sheep in the family. In her words, Les is an alcoholic who can always be counted on to screw up in business and marriage. Ms. Kessler's parents, Martin and Catherine, alternate between distancing emotionally from Les and bailing him out financially. Ms. Kessler is cut off from her brother and sees him only every few years at family gatherings. Let us first examine father's side of the family diagram, with an eye toward linking the patterns of the past with those of the present. Mourning of father. When I gathered the above data during my initial appointment with Ms. Kessler, I understood why the relationship between Billy and his father had become intense and conflictual when Billy turned 8 and entered 3rd grade. Billy is now the age that Mr. Kessler was when he lost his father. In addition, Mr. Kessler is 36 years old, just past the age that his father was when he died. It is predictable that Mr. Kessler would have an anniversary reaction at this time and experience a reactivation of buried emotions that surrounded the loss of his dad. Mr. Kessler did not directly mourn his dad or consciously experience the associated feelings of anger, anxiety, and loss as this anniversary date arrived. Instead, as is typical, he focused his emotional energy on a third party, his son, and became very reactive to any sign of trouble in Billy. It is the intensity of our reactions toward another person's problem that ensures not only the escalation but also the continuation of the problem itself. Billy's lack of cooperativeness increased in direct proportion to father's emotional reactivity and mother's reactivity to father, setting a circular dance in motion. Why did Mr. Kessler handle his anxiety by becoming focused on a child? This is a common way for mothers to manage emotional intensity and stress, as our social education actually fosters this child focus. But men are not immune from this triangle. Other triangular patterns might also have arisen. Mr. Kessler, for example, might have had an affair or left his wife at the time of this anniversary reaction. He might have distanced from her by becoming increasingly work-focused, which is a typical male pattern of managing anxiety. He himself might have under-functioned and developed a new physical or emotional problem. He might have constantly found fault with his wife, leaving his children free from his emotional focus. We all handle stress in one or more of the above ways, and ideally in more than one way. If the only way a family handles stress is to focus on a problem child, the outcome will be a severely troubled child. If the only way a family handles stress is through marital fighting, the outcome will be a severely troubled marriage. Why Billy? Father and Billy share the same sibling position as first-born males. Father is thus more likely to identify with Billy than with his other children, to confuse Billy with himself, and to have more intense reactions to the strengths and weaknesses he perceives in his first-born son. Predictably, this might be the most problematic or intense relationship for Mr. Kessler, and the intensity would increase at a time of high stress. The fact that Mr. Kessler's own father was also a firstborn further magnifies the emotional charge of Mr. Kessler's relationship with Billy. Birth order is an enormously important factor in determining how our parents perceive and label us, and how we do likewise with our own children. Be responsible, son. Nothing pushed Mr. Kessler's buttons more than seeing Billy behave in a way that was not competent and responsible. Why? The family diagram alone provides some good clues. At age 8, Mr. Kessler lost his father and was left with his mother, Lorraine, who was the younger sister of a sister. What is known about the typical characteristics of a younger sister of a sister? As parents, often they are not comfortable taking charge, assuming a position of authority, and taking the initiative to do what has to be done. As a firstborn child and son, Mr. Kessler might have exercised his typical characteristics of responsibility and leadership at a very early age, perhaps trying to fill his father's shoes and help his widowed mother out. When I met with Mr. Kessler, my speculations were confirmed. He had been a little man at an early age, and his own need to be a kid who could goof up and let others care for him was buried under a lifetime of overfunctioning and worrying about other family members. He was quick to react to the first sign of irresponsibility in Billy because Mr. Kessler was so responsible as a child that he never really had much of a childhood. As he was later able to say to me, "I think I get so hot under the collar when I see Billy goofing off to have fun because I'm a little jealous. After my father died, I stopped being a kid and became a worrier, long before I was really ready. My problem is that I feel too responsible for things." I have a problem. Sometime later, during a week when Mr. Kessler found himself particularly reactive and angry in response to his son's casual attitude toward school, he took Billy on his lap and told him the following. "Billy, this week I've been getting very upset and grouchy when I see you goofing up at school. I sure have been getting on your case. I think I figured out what my problem is. You know, Billy, when I was 8 years old, my dad died, and I was left without a dad. I felt angry and sad and frightened. And now that you're 8 years old, like I was at that time, a lot of those old feelings are coming back. And sometimes the way that I deal with those feelings is to get on your back and fight with you so that I don't have to feel so sad about my own dad." Billy looked at him wide-eyed. Then he said, "That's not fair. It doesn't make sense." Mr. Kessler replied, "You're right, Billy. Sometimes dads do things that don't make too much sense. I sure owe you an apology. It's my job to work on these old feelings I have about my dad dying. It's your job to decide what sort of student you're going to be in school. I'm going to do my best to try to work on my job and try to stay out of your job. I won't be successful all the time, but I'll be working on it." "Does this mean that I can play with my friends and not have to do my homework?" asked Billy, with some mixture of anxiety and glee. "Not a chance," said Mr. Kessler, giving Billy a playful punch on the arm. "You know what the rules are, kid, and it's up to you to follow them. But you're going to have to decide what sort of student you'll be in school, and I can't decide that for you, even though I may try sometimes." Billy said nothing, but several weeks later he began to ask all kinds of questions about Grandfather Lewis. Taking the emotional focus off Billy did not mean adopting a do-whatever-you-please-and-I-don't-care attitude. Mr. Kessler's own style was to set pretty strict rules about the consequences of misbehavior. The degree of strictness or permissiveness will vary from family to family and is not of itself a problem. What is important is that Mr. Kessler enforced his rules without getting emotionally intense and blaming. And he made it clear to Billy that he, father, was dealing with his own issues and problems. It is also crucial that each parent support, rather than undermine, the rule-setting of the other, even if they don't always see eye to eye. Most of us would not think of sharing something personal about our struggles with our children, as Mr. Kessler did, or as I did following my visit to my parents in Phoenix. Yet there is hardly a more effective way to break a circular pattern. We maximize the opportunity for growth for all family members when we stop focusing our primary worry energy and anger energy on the under-functioning individual and begin to share a bit about our own problem with the situation. This involves a shift from "you have a problem" to "I have a problem." In time, after working on the task of mourning his dad and modifying his over-functioning position with his mother and sister, Mr. Kessler was able to do more of this. What about Ms. Kessler? As we look at her side of the family diagram, what predictions might we make about her relationship with Billy? A black sheep brother. Billy is in the same sibling position as Les, Ms. Kessler's black sheep brother, who has made countless bad moves with jobs and women. In this key family triangle, Les is in the outside, under-functioning role. Both his parents are in a blaming position toward him, while his sister, Ms. Kessler, takes a distancing position from him and a fix-it role with her parents. At times of low stress, she gossips with other family members about Les and his problems. And at times of high stress, she advises her parents on how to handle him and then gets angry when they ignore her advice. While the emotional cutoff between Ms. Kessler and her brother keeps the anxiety down in that relationship, it is re-energized in her relationship with her son, Billy, partly because he is in the same sibling position as Les, and also because he happens to possess some actual physical and personality characteristics that remind Mother of her big brother. Often, the underground intensity from a cutoff is not re-energized until an anniversary date comes up. For example, when Billy turns 12, which is the age at which Les began getting into trouble, or 23, Les's age when Ms. Kessler cut off from him. In the Kessler family, the intensity between Mother and Billy began to surface when Ms. Kessler got out of the middle of the relationship between her husband and son, and things calmed down on that front. To some extent, we are all prone to confuse our children with ourselves and with other family members. We project onto our children who we are and what we unconsciously wish, fear, and need. This process of projection gains steam from our unfinished business with siblings and parents. If Mother makes no changes in her own family of origin, her projections onto current family members may be especially intense. She may, for example, encourage Billy to be a star in the family, an especially good child who will show none of the black sheep qualities that she sees in her brother or fears in herself. Or she may anxiously worry that Billy will turn out to be an irresponsible and troubled child like Les, and unwittingly encourage this behavior by the intensity of her watchful focus on it. Billy may sense that his mother needs him to be a certain way for her own sake, and proceed to accommodate to or rebel against her needs. In either case, both Ms. Kessler and Billy become less able to directly manage the challenge of their own personal growth. Like her husband, Ms. Kessler had homework to do with her family of origin. Over time, Ms. Kessler gathered more data about her mother's and father's families, which provided her with a more sympathetic and objective understanding of why Les, rather than she, was more likely to underfunction and live out the black sheep role. She learned to observe the patterns and triangles in her family of origin, as she had in her current nuclear family, and she took steps to get out of the middle of the relationship between Les and her parents. She did this by maintaining one-to-one emotional contact with all parties, without advising, taking sides, or talking with her parents about Les's problems. To do this required her to initiate closer contact with her brother, and she began to gradually share with him more about her life, including her own under-functioning side. Eventually, she became much less focused on and reactive to the behavior of her husband and son, and she no longer felt dominated by anger and worry in these important relationships. What Mr. and Ms. Kessler both learned is that children have a remarkable capacity to handle their problems when we begin to take care of our own. The work they each did with their own families was like money in the bank for Billy and his two siblings, because children are the carriers of whatever has been left unresolved from the generations that went before. Talking about the fact that Mr. Kessler lost his father and Ms. Kessler was cut off from her older brother may seem a bit removed from the subject of women and anger. Yet all of us are vulnerable to intense, non-productive, angry reactions in our current relationships if we do not deal openly and directly with emotional issues from our first family, in particular, losses and cutoffs. If we do not observe and understand how our triangles operate, our anger can keep us stuck in the past, rather than serving as an incentive and guide to form more productive relationship patterns for the future. Let's take a look at a similar family triangle in order to review the major points we have learned about observing and changing three-person relationship patterns. Why can't he marry a nice Jewish girl? Sarah's son, Jerry, turned 34 the very day that Sarah showed up at my office. My son Jerry is dating a non-Jewish woman for over 3 years, Sarah explained. This girl, Julie is her name, is not even good for him, and she has terrible problems herself. My husband and I know that he'll be unhappy if he marries her, but my son won't listen to reason. Sarah told me that she was very worried about Jerry, but even a casual observer could see that she was also very angry. In fact, an atmosphere of chronic anger and tension permeated their relationship. Jerry, I learned, was the younger of two brothers and still living at home. Although he graduated with honors from college, he had since been shifting from job to job, and his lack of direction was a source of family concern. Jerry, then, was in an under-functioning position in the family. Sarah's story is more than familiar to us by now. She is engaging in increasingly intense efforts to change her son, despite the fact that such efforts only help keep the old pattern going. What is the pattern? According to Sarah's description of her interactions, she blames and then distances under stress. Sometimes she blames Julie. She just doesn't consider other people very much, does she? And sometimes she blames Jerry. I think you're rebelling against your family rather than making a mature choice. When Jerry comes to Julie's defense or to his own, Sarah fights and then distances. While this is going on, Jerry's father distances from both his wife and his son, and then later unites with his wife in their shared concern over Jerry. Sarah describes herself as occupying the outside position in the key triangle between herself, Jerry, and Julie. When Sarah criticizes Julie to her son, she implicitly invites him to side with her against his girlfriend. Should Jerry go along with this, he and his mother would have a closer relationship at Julie's expense, and Julie would temporarily occupy the outside position in the triangle. What more typically happens, however, is that Jerry comes to Julie's defense, which Sarah experiences as siding against her. At this point, conflict is likely to break out between mother and son. Why shouldn't Sarah let her son know that she does not approve of his dating a non-Jewish woman? She should. Sarah ought to feel free to share her thoughts and feelings about important issues like this one with Jerry. She might, for example, let her son know what her problem is with the situation. Instead, she criticizes, advises, and blames. Now, nothing would be wrong with this if Sarah were satisfied with the situation, but she's not. As Sarah describes it, her interactions with Jerry frequently end in conflict and or distance. The pattern has been going on for a long time, and Sarah is feeling angry and dissatisfied. What might the payoffs be for this family in maintaining the status quo? The old pattern will keep Sarah and her son stuck together in a close way, albeit negative closeness, just like Maggie and her mother, Chapter 4, who fought about the baby in order to avoid negotiating their ultimate separateness and independence. The triangle between mother, son, and girlfriend here serves to reduce anxiety in the family by keeping other important issues between family members underground. It also protects Jerry and Julie from squarely identifying issues and conflicts in their own relationship. What can Sarah do to get out of the triangle? The three essential ingredients of extricating oneself from a triangle are staying calm, staying out, and hanging in. Staying calm means that Sarah can underreact and take a low-keyed approach when stress hits. Anxiety and intensity are the driving force behind triangles. Staying out means that Sarah leaves Jerry and Julie on their own to manage their relationship. Therefore, no advising, no helping, no criticizing, no blaming, no fixing, no lecturing, no analyzing, and no taking sides in their problems. Hanging in means that Sarah maintains emotional closeness with her son and makes some emotional contact with Julie as well. Sarah may temporarily seek distance when things get hot, but when staying out means cutting off, patterns tend not to change. New steps to an old dance. When Sarah was ready to get out of the old triangle, the following dialogue ensued. "You know, Jerry, I owe you an apology for giving you such a hard time about Julie. What a terrible time I've had thinking about my son marrying a woman who's not Jewish. And it still is not easy for me. Sometimes I react with a lot of anger and hurt, and I guess you've been the target for that. But I'm beginning to realize that my feelings are my own responsibility, and that it's not your job to ensure your mother's happiness. Your job is to find the very best relationship that you can for yourself. And only you can decide if that's going to be with Julie. Certainly I'm in no position to make that decision for you, or even to know what's best. I haven't even given Julie half a chance." Jerry stared at his mother as if she'd just come down from another planet. "Even though I've been on your back," Sarah continued, "I know that you're perfectly capable of making the best choice for yourself without my help. You know, I was just remembering something the other day. Before I met your dad, I was dating someone my parents didn't approve of. I never really stood up to them, even though I was grown up and earning my own money. Do you know what I did? I would sneak out of the house and see him in secret. Later, when my parents disapproved so strongly of your father, we ran off and eloped." Sarah let out a big laugh, and Jerry closed his mouth, which had been hanging open. He looked at his mother with curiosity. This was the first time that his mother had shared something about her own experience as it related to their angry struggle. "Did you ever date a man who wasn't Jewish?" he asked, not knowing what to expect next. "You know, I simply never considered it. I really don't think that it would have been possible for me. It just wasn't an option." Sarah became thoughtful and then continued. "But that was me at another time. You and I are two different people." Sarah felt wonderful after this talk. But that night as she got into bed, she was mildly depressed. She felt irritated with her husband, Paul, and provoked a fight with him, which eased her tension a bit about the change she was making with her son. What Sarah felt is simply the discomfort that occurs as we begin to move differently in an old pattern and navigate a more separate and mature relationship with another family member. As we have seen, pressures to reinstate the old pattern come from both within and without. 2 weeks later, Sarah encountered some tough tests of her resolve to move differently. Jerry dropped hints that he and Julie were talking about getting married. Sarah was able to stay calm and underreact. She did not hide the fact that she had always hoped for a Jewish daughter-in-law. However, her attitude conveyed respect for Jerry's judgment and recognition that choosing a wife was his job and not hers. Jerry then began a new series of counter-moves as he started to criticize Julie to his mother. "Do you know, Mother, Julie's father had a birthday today, and I couldn't even get Julie to call him or stop by? With increasing frequency and ingenuity, Jerry invited his mother to join him in criticizing Julie. Sarah bit her tongue so as not to bite the bait. Instead, she said, "Well, you know Julie much better than I do. If that bothers you, perhaps you can talk with her about it and let her know your feelings. Or, whatever the problem is, I'm sure the two of you can work it out." Sarah herself was initiating more contact with Julie and was discovering things about her she genuinely liked and respected. Had Sarah joined with her son in criticizing Julie, she would have reinstated the old triangle. The only difference would be that Julie, not Sarah, would occupy the outside position. People would change their positions in the triangle, but the triangle itself would remain unchanged. Anxiety would be reduced, but at the expense of each participant's ability to identify and negotiate issues with other parties. If triangles keep underlying issues in each two-person relationship from surfacing, what happens when a triangle breaks up? Here is a brief look at some of the changes that had occurred in this family 8 months later as a result of Sarah's extricating herself from a key triangle. Jerry and Julie. Jerry and Julie were aware of some significant difficulties in their relationship, and Jerry was expressing genuine uncertainty about whether Julie was the woman he wanted to marry. His critical feelings about Julie and his own ambivalence about marrying outside his religion had previously been held in check by the old pattern in which mother criticized Julie and he was free to come to her defense. It was predictable that when Sarah got out of the middle of this relationship and gave Jerry her blessings to do the very best for himself, the real issues between Jerry and Julie would surface. If their relationship had been on firmer ground, it might well have been strengthened at this point. Apparently, this was not the case. Sarah and Jerry. The relationship between Sarah and her son became calmer and more open, as Sarah became genuinely less reactive to her son's relationship with Julie. With the intense focus off this third party, the important issue of negotiating separateness and independence surfaced between her and Jerry. During one of our sessions together, Sarah said to me for the first time, "Julie or no Julie, I'm beginning to think that Jerry is having a hard time leaving home. What's a grown man doing still living with his parents? I find myself wondering if there's some connection between his problem leaving home and my problem letting him go. You know, I was never really very independent from my own mother. When she protested my marriage to Paul, we ran off and eloped, and I didn't write to her for several months. I didn't have the courage to say to her, 'I love you, Mom, but I love Paul, too, and it's my life.' I just cut off from her and didn't face the issue." Sarah and Paul. Paul was a quiet, withdrawn man who was not very comfortable with closeness. The mother-son-girlfriend triangle served him well because it basically left him out of this intense family dynamic and kept him and his wife focused on parental rather than marital issues. When Sarah stopped focusing her major worry energy on her son, she and Paul came face to face with the distance and dissatisfaction that each of them experienced in their marriage, and they were forced to pay closer attention to their own relationship. As a consequence, Sarah and Paul informed Jerry that he was to move out because they were getting older and wanted to enjoy some time and space for themselves. Jerry did find his own apartment, but he still attempted to hang on harder to test out whether his parents really meant business. When Jerry learned that they had no plans to take him back in and that they were managing just fine without him, he began to put his energy into coming to grips with his own pattern of multiple failures at work and in relationships. Focusing on a problem child can work like magic to deflect awareness away from a potentially troubled marriage or a difficult emotional issue we may have with a parent or grandparent. Children have a radar-like sensitivity to the quality of their parents' lives, and they may unconsciously try to help the family out through their own under-functioning behavior. The difficult child is often doing his or her very best to solve a problem for the family, and keep anxiety-arousing issues from coming out in the open. Sarah and Sarah. Sarah's focus on Jerry and Julie also protected her from thinking about her own life goals. When she removed herself from the old triangle, she was suddenly confronted by some serious questions. What were her current priorities? What goals did she want to pursue at this point in her life? Sarah came face to face with her own self. How easy it is to avoid this challenge of self-confrontation by keeping our emotional energy narrowly focused on men and children, just as society encourages us to do. If you are directing your primary emotional energy toward an under-functioning family member, have you ever wondered where all that worry energy or anger energy would go if that individual was off the map? When Sarah stopped busying herself with her son's life, she began to worry about her own. Jerry, in turn, began to worry about his. Chapter 9. Tasks for the Daring and Courageous. Jog, meditate, ventilate, bite your tongue, silently count to 10. There is no shortage of advice about what you can do with anger in the short run. Some experts will tell you to get it out of your system as quickly as possible, and others offer different advice. In the long run, however, it's not what you do or don't do with your anger at a particular moment that counts. The important issue is whether, over time, you can use your anger as an incentive to achieve greater self-clarity and discover new ways to navigate old relationships. We have seen how getting angry gets us nowhere if we unwittingly perpetuate the old patterns from which our anger springs. If you're serious about making a change in a relationship, you may want to read this book more than once. The important How to Do It lessons are contained in each woman's story. It's up to you to connect these with your own life. The patterns I've described are universal among women, and you have undoubtedly recognized yourself many times. Nonetheless, you may initially feel discouraged when you try to move differently in your relationships. When you're in the dance, it is especially difficult to observe the broader pattern and change your own part. In this chapter, I'll suggest a few tasks to help you review some of what you've learned, add to your understanding of triangles and circular dances, and test out your ability to move differently in relationships. You may want to get together with a friend or form a group with other women who have read this book and who share your new vocabulary and insights. Practicing observation. Begin to observe your characteristic style of managing anger. Do you turn anger into tears, hurt, and self-doubt, as Karen did with her boss? Do you alternate between silent submission and non-productive blaming, as Maggie did with her mother? We all have predictable patterned ways of managing anger and conflict, though they may vary in different relationships. For example, when conflict is about to surface, you may fight with your mother, distance from your father, underfunction with your boss, and pursue your boyfriend. Give some thought to your usual style of negotiating relationships when anxiety and stress are high. My own pattern goes something like this. When stress mounts, I tend to underfunction with my family of origin. I forget birthdays, become incompetent, and end up with a headache, diarrhea, a cold, or